So the subject, spoiled for choice, was chatting to just a few people this morning about the title, and I think spoiled is a word which I find is an interesting word in the way that we use it. Sometimes we'll use it in the context that, especially with birthdays and Christmas, where someone was spoiled with the number of gifts that they would get. And for most people, I think we see this as being a really favorable thing, that, you know, they've got lots of gifts, but I actually think the true essence of it is not that favorable, in the sense that you create a slightly negative impact by the number of gifts that were given. Now, for me, I know that I am an exception. There's always rules and there's exceptions. For me, there is an exception. You can pour many, many gifts on me when it's my birthday and Christmas, and you cannot spoil me as a result. I won't get spoiled. In fact, it will just develop positive things. Hey, Caroline, hopefully will make note of that with my birthday coming up soon. I facilitated a session, actually three of these sessions over the last 2 weeks, and I started the session with four things that I asked everybody to contemplate. The one was by choice. So this particular organization has a strong emphasis on the concept of choice. And they try and promote the idea of literally doing the right things by choice, and to be aware of what you are doing by choice. The second concept that we looked at was the idea of optionality. Optionality. And this was a word that was brought up by the guy in charge of the team a few months ago. And he wanted everybody to start thinking about the concept of optionality. There were certain guiding principles. Were we treating some of the ones which weren't optional as optional? And how did we get more of what is optional in the minds of everybody, that these things were really almost required, but without forcing it down on people? The third one was a concept that I think I've been aware of for quite a long time, the concept of can. You can do something. You know, so our motor cars, as an example, can go 140 kilometers down the freeway. But should you? So the idea of what we can do, but where there's a should you connected to that particular concept. And then just the element of buy-in. And buy-in is one of these corporate things, say, that we talk about. And definitely at the Temple of Yahweh, whenever we talk about something, let's say from our outer life, especially in our work life, which is associated with work, we can have a few reservations about those terms, you know, because it's not necessarily a spiritual concept. But buy-in, what is it really? It's that thing that you really just commit to. A thing that once you've bought into something, there's a certain level of commitment to it. So those four concepts at the back, I think, are important to bear in mind during the course of the talk. Then we just look at if, our reflection at the beginning of this talk, we just reflect a little bit, each one of us. Generally, I think we know what it is that we need to do when we are wanting to be healthier, when we're wanting to be happier, when we're wanting to be calmer, and when we want to live without conflict, be at ease. But we generally also know when we are doing these things or not. And when we reflect, if we realize we know that we should be doing something but we're not doing it, and we reflect on why, I think one of the words that would come into our reflection, if we're honest with ourselves, is the principle of discipline. Discipline. And generally it's a lack of discipline. Just one thing. Discipline. And once you realize that all that is needed is discipline, I think in theory it should be quite simple to change. But is it? Is it? Reflecting on discipline, have any of you noticed a trend that doing the right thing is easier when you're part of a committed group of people? As an example, when we attend a retreat, Yaki Temple, when you enter in a park run on a Saturday morning, when you attend an AA group, everything in those group formats is easier. They tend to promote the right behavior, and because you're part of it, because you have almost a running partner, you support it in keeping you on track. So aids discipline. Or even having a deadline. So when you're studying and you know there's an exam date, how that deadline of the exam date keeps you on track. Or an annual visit to a doctor. You tend to focus a little bit more on doing the right things, eating the right things, leading up to that. Or having to get an electrical compliance certificate on your building when you want to sell it. Now, I think, just having observed life, is that there are two, and there are many, but two of the critical success factors in life. I believe are confidence on the one hand, and discipline on the other. And if we think about confidence and discipline, and we just think about what are those things, what are the things that I do when I'm alone? Not when I'm in the company of other people, but when I'm alone. And really when nobody's watching. You know, when nobody's watching. And some people have that distinguishing factor between elements of conscience, doing the right thing when somebody's watching, and doing the right thing when nobody's watching. But without confidence and discipline, I don't think, well, these two things, without an element, confidence and discipline, without an additional element, I don't think that they're complete. And in my opinion, I think what makes these two things complete is the addition of the word self. So self-confidence and self-discipline. I've seen many, many people that somebody else has the confidence in them. So an external person says, you know, Ikram, I have the confidence in you to do this. But if Ikram doesn't share that sentiment, the confidence that an external person has in you is almost a wasted confidence. It has to go into the space of self. Now when I was looking at the concept of discipline, I typed in discipline into kind of Google and it threw up three aspects of discipline. And I can definitely relate to them. So three types of disciplines. Preventive disciplines. So these things would be proactive, things that preempt. And what came to mind when I wrote it down was preempting the death of our physical body. And having preventive disciplines with that in mind. Supportive disciplines. So these are things which bring you back if you stray. So they'll bring you back if you stray, supportive disciplines. And then corrective disciplines. And these are quite important because these are the things that are the consequences. Yeah, they're the consequences. If you break the rules or if you ignore the rules, then what measures are taken to bring you back? And if you look at the concept of being police, it's relatively easy. But when you were alone, how did these things work for you? As a result of spending time at this temple, and it may not be, but I'm going to attribute it to that, I decided that there was a very clear link between two things. And it's again quite obvious, but discipline and discipleship. Discipline and discipleship. So I doubted, I googled, there were a few things which I came up with, but from my own perspective, I saw the one as doing the right things in the right way, at the right time, for the right reasons. Discipline. And the other one, guidance, as to what the right things are and how and when to do them. Some type of teaching, some type of guide. If you look more formally, discipline can be defined as the actual training, self-control, and practice required to master what is being taught. And the disciple He's a learner or a follower who is committed to a teacher's teachings. Two sides of the same coin. And I think they have to coexist. Discipleship requires submitting your will to something. And then rearranging your life to practice these teachings. Rearranging your life to practice these teachings. And when I looked at the word rearranging, I was reminded about this concept which comes up so much, which people refer to as insanity. You know, the concept of the doing the same things but expecting a different result versus rearranging your life to be able to do different things. Now in the Sufi teachings, Hazrat Nirmal Khan talks about discipleship. And he talks about four approaches to discipleship. The first, he basically summarizes as a student. So a person who just wants to learn, a student. The second one he describes as a thief. Somebody who wants, who takes, and then leaves and takes it off with them. The third one he describes as, doesn't have a specific term, he basically says, I hear you, and I want to listen, but I'm going to hold my judgment back, so I don't give you my confidence. Now I think it's a little bit of a reticent approach. And the fourth one is full confidence is given to a teacher. Full confidence is given to a teacher. He clearly states that only the last one works. The other three don't work. So the student, the thief, and the reticent don't work. Only the one where full commitment is given works. Now the first three approaches, I think, would include things like picking and choosing, accepting and rejecting, waiting and seeing, needing to see to believe, and judging immaturely or judging prematurely. Now, does spoiled for choice, when there's lots of choice available, does that lead to a risk of not committing? I think it could, and that's something that you can think for yourself. So when you have too many options, is it more difficult to commit? Or if you like to keep your options open, so you don't like to commit, because what if something better comes around? You like to keep the options open. I would like to have that freedom. So if you think about, let's say, where was I spoiled for choice? I was spoiled for choice in high school. The school that I went to offered many sports. And I was relatively good at sports, so I literally could have chosen anything. But it was spoiled for choice. So if there was only one sport, it would have been really, really easy. You're going to play netball, and that's what everybody would have done. And then we have on the other side fears or doubts. So any fear, like, oh, I'm going to lose my freedom. This is going to be too narrow for me, too restrictive. I'm going to lose spontaneity. I'm going to lose that spontaneity. All my past experiences make me a little bit worried about this. Is this a bit cultish that I'm going to be getting into? And then fashions. You know, the fashion of the day says we should be doing this or we should be doing that. Now what comes to mind here is the saying, jack of all trades. And then master of none. And I've never thought of master in the context of spiritual path. Whenever anybody had said that to me, jack of all trades, master of none, I'd always thought of just in terms of the normal functionality of it, okay? Using a hammer or using a pair of pliers or being able to change a light bulb. I'm a master of none of that. But I'm very good at opening gifts and appreciating it. So if we think about choice in the spiritual realm, and we think about these candles, I must say that during the course of my life, I literally started to find out more and more and more and more things. And maybe some of these things are known to you. The Noble Eightfold Path. The Upanishad. The Sufi teachings. The Sermon on the Mount. The Ten Commandments. The Six Articles of Faith. And the Five Pillars of Islam. And from the Zoroastrian, the Sacred Triad. Many, many, many different things. Spoiled for choice. And then I reflected a little bit further. At what times in my life did I not have choice? Growing up in my household, as a small child, my mother cooked supper. And when it came to 6 o'clock, we would be called. And you sat down and you ate. There was one thing. You ate it. Sunday school, at a stage my parents decided I needed to go to Sunday school, and they sent me to the one which was down the road. It was actually close to a tennis club where my dad played tennis. A bit unfair. He was playing tennis and I needed to go to Sunday school. So it was chosen because it was there. It didn't come into the equation as to what type of Sunday school it was, what type of church it was. It was just Sunday school. And at school, the subjects that we had, one of the subjects that we had was physical education, PE. And if it wasn't everybody's favorite, if that wouldn't have been what they would have liked to have done at that particular point in time, it didn't matter. You were kind of like doing PE because somebody decided it would be good for you to develop these physical skills. And when television started in South Africa, there was just like one thing. You could watch the pattern, right, the test pattern. Last 5 minutes before it actually started. And then when did choice arrive? Choice arrived more fully as I got older, leaving home and buying my own groceries and then standing there going, pasta or potatoes, what should I buy? Churches, you know, you suddenly start to become aware of the fact that it's not simply just a church, there's a whole lot of different flavors, there are different religions. So suddenly it just became all these different things, philosophies, streaming nowadays. And I literally kind of come to the conclusion that almost with age has come choice. And the older I get, the more discipline I feel I need, because there's more and more choice. So if I take the concept of self-discipline, and then I ask myself, am I a formal disciple? I have a part, commitment, but it's definitely not a formal discipleship in the sense that I'm following somebody who's dictating to me what I should do and when I should do it. So I'm one of the three: student, thief, and reticent. So what do I have to do? If there's this concept of self-discipline and I'm not practicing formal discipleship, what's the answer to me right now so that I don't float around? I came up with a term, self-discipleship. And I don't know if that has been ever coined before, but that's what I'm going to call it, self-discipleship. What does this mean? And I'm going to treat this as an interim or measure until maybe something changes. But to keep myself on track, self-discipleship. It really means one thing. If at any point in your life, your personal path is clear to you, based on your current understanding, based on your current conscience, your current integrity, and you have that understanding, the big question is, have you rearranged your life according to those principles? Now consider being on a flight and they come walking down the aisle with a trolley. Chicken, beef, vegetarian. And you now have these choices and it's difficult. And you're going, oh, which one do I feel like? But once you're committed to something, as an example, if you're vegetarian, it becomes quite easy. It's like you're able to channel all of these choices into something, and I think it makes it easier, makes it a little bit easier. So if you were to just follow your own principles, if you were to be your own disciple of what you have come to learn at this particular point in time, I think you would be able to vet and channel your energies a little bit better. So to what extent do I currently have self-discipleship worked out? Do I follow my own truth? Is it daily? Or only on those occasions where it's ad hoc, periodic, on the basis when I'm attending something which supports those particular principles, where the group holds me responsible? What are my priorities? Do my daily disciplines align with my current true understanding of life? And are my disciplines complete? Do they cover both my inner priorities and my outer priorities? And when I started to think of this, I kind of came up with the idea that for me, I like uncomplicated. And I find sometimes in life, people love making things complex. And I think it's a way of almost keeping power. Like an MBA. An MBA in business circles is promoted as, if you don't have an MBA, can you really function effectively? But I've spent 30 years looking at success, and I've actually come to the conclusion that success is sometimes just doing the simple things and not overcomplicating stuff. So you can be a student forever and ever and ever and ever, always thinking that there's more that one needs to gain. But a minimalistic approach could be really, really good. And what do I relate to? So I like simple, and then what do I relate to? Do I relate to a set of guiding principles that tell me what not to do? Or a set of guiding principles that tell me what to do? And personally, I like the concept of the guiding principles that will give me right action. What are the things which are going to be good for me to do? If I'm left with only what not to do, then I don't really know what to do. And then if you can sit quietly, and I've tried this, just sit quietly and ask myself, so what exists in my inner being, hopefully at a level of soul, that are my guiding principles? What have I recognized through my life? What have I come to realize at a deep level? What is it that I know now? It might change. And my path doesn't have to be complicated. In fact, the simpler the better. And you'll hear just now in the prayer the beautiful line, know and understand life better. And I always find that it's worth returning to ideals. So many ideas, and to have them in mind, love, harmony, beauty, wisdom, compassion, joy, bliss, peace. Endure all, tolerate all, tolerate light, authentic, just to mention a few. What came from all of this, this desire to understand myself, to give myself an opportunity to follow myself, and wanting to keep it simple, I came up with, for whatever reason, this idea of three-letter words. Just three-letter words. And I don't know for another reason, but I came up with a number of 10. I think that's because I studied accountancy. So 10. So a nice round number, three-letter words. And when I sat and I wrote them, this is the list that I came up with. God, and think if that has any resonance for yourself. Ray, just as a reminder, I have used this before, it comes from the Sufi teachings, where there's this ray of light, and one side is God and the other side is my soul. One, that unity of everything. Ego, the thing that I need to look out for. Joy, the natural state of a soul. Dog. Now, dog was interesting because there have been a few things that have come up on social media recently where people just film dogs and then they say, just look at this thing. It's how we should be. Permanently happy. Eternally grateful. Always excited. Always embracing life. And then there was this wonderful little story about how God had made the dog and then got busy making giraffes and snakes and other things and forgot to give this little thing a name. And he had named all the others giraffe, bushbuck, kudu. And then when he was finished, the dog came running back and said, yeah, you haven't given me a name. He said, no, I've kept something special for you. The reverse of my own name. Then we have, and it was interesting that this next one came after dog, because I was reminded of Barbara Woodhouse, sit. And, you know, the meditation was always quite complicated for me. But I chatted to the Buddhist people that use this temple for their base, and they sit. That's what they do, they just sit quietly, just sit. Vet, which I used earlier, happens also to be connected with the dog, but just vetting what fits and what does not fit. See within, see, and ask. If you're not sure, either person or use prayer. 10 things, they're simple. God, Ray, one, ego, joy, dog, sit, vet, see, ask. For me, that's really all I need to do. Now, Hazrat Khan says about teachers that they don't necessarily want disciples. This concept of wanting a disciple is not part of the repertoire. If you want a disciple, then you can't be a teacher because it goes against the principles. But in order for you to follow somebody, you do need to hold them in regard. You do need to have a commitment to them. So it's kind of a bit of a contradiction in a way. But social media gets us to think about followers and following. And how fickle can we be? Hey? It's like we take this there, that there, that there, this there. Okay, don't unfollow, follow someone new. And we literally have the student, the thief, or the wait and see kind of approach to most of those stuff. But what if you were keen to follow me now? And what if you thought, that's really wise, those 10 things, I want to follow that. But you've still got your, doesn't quite fit. I would prefer it if it had a little bit more of a different element. So, what then? What would you need? Maybe you want the 4-letter words. And you're not happy with 10. So then I have to give you, Lord, give true form, open, free, life, know, just, pray, mask, fear, time, year, seek, love, wise, and soul. And if it doesn't quite fit, then you'd be looking for something else, not committing, looking, not committing. And maybe somebody says, oh, it's a little bit too complex for me, I would like something simpler. So maybe just 5 things with two letters. Maybe that could be done. Be the change. On purpose, aligned with your ideals. Know clear boundaries. Go within. And do what a wise person would do. And what if something in you said, oh, that's still too complicated. I would only like one thing with 1 letter. I think even that can be taken care of. There are only 2 options, I or I. I chose I. Know myself as a body and as a soul. Commitment is going to require self-confidence and motivation. You've got to be motivated and you've got to have confidence. If you have neither, you have nothing. If you're motivated but not confident, you will watch. If you have confidence but not motivation, you will potentially wait, possibly to your own destruction. You must have motivation and self-confidence to commit to something. Both activates it. Once committed, discipline is next. And I really think that as an interim measure, just being a self-disciple would be really, really a worthy thing to contend with. I'm going to close today by going back to the readings. So listen out for the key themes. In the Hindu scriptures we read, the Supreme Being is brilliant, the light of lights. That which knowers of the soul do know. In the Buddhist, now I am without fear or anxiety, trustful and not alarmed. I swell at ease, subdued, secure, with peaceful mind. Over and over again I cry, oh happiness, oh happiness, the natural state of the soul. Zoroastrian, the religion of the wise one cleanses the faithful from evil thought, word and deed, as a swift rushing mighty wind cleanses the plain. In the Jewish, in returning and rest shall ye be saved. There's another four-letter word, and rest. In quietness and in confidence shall be your strength. Though our outward man is decaying, yet our inward man is renewed day by day. And in the scriptures of Islam, O ye who believe, seek help with patience and with prayer, for God is with the patient. And lastly, in Sufi teachings, when the spark that is to be found in every heart, the spark that may be called the divine spark in man, is blown upon and the flame arises, the whole life becomes illuminated, and man hears and sees and knows and he understands. A Sufi poet said that every leaf of the tree becomes like a page of the sacred book when the heart is open to read it and when the soul has opened its eyes.